The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
There are so many investigations swirling around Donald Trump right now that R. Kelly is like, I'm glad I'm not that guy.
Ooh.
And the majority of Americans think he is guilty of something. This is true. According to a poll that came out yesterday, 64% of Americans thought Trump had committed crimes before he became president, including 33% of Republicans. And yet, his approval rating with Republicans is 82%. Police! Police! He just stole my wallet. Stop that man. I want to vote for him. But unlike his cheeseburgers, Trump is not taking these investigations lying down. Now, Trump is fighting back. He is stonewalling the congressional investigation into first son-in-law and man trying to communicate to his wife that he's ready to leave the party, Jared Kushner. You see, here's the deal. Jared Kushner's security clearance was repeatedly opposed by the intelligence agencies. One of the reasons is that he left so many foreign contacts and financial interests off his ethics disclosure paperwork that he had to update it at least 40 times.
I thought it was 100.
You know what they say? If at first you don't succeed, remind them that you're married to the president's daughter.
I'm sure he does that all the time.
So Jared got it anyway after Trump ordered officials to give Jared Kushner a security clearance. One of the few Trump orders that did not end with, and a side of fries. But yesterday, the White House told Democrats they won't hand over the Kushner security documents. So now they have no choice but to get them from Russia.
Oh.
And we know this is how it went down, Trump ordering it, because then Chief of Staff John Kelly wrote a contemporaneous internal memo about how he had been ordered to give Mr. Kushner the top security clearance. It's all going to be in his White House tell-all. Jared's not the only one who got a security clearance out of the discount bin.
No.
So did first daughter and woman watching another brunch party get seated even though they just got here. Ivanka Trump. Wow. She got a top secret security clearance. All Barack Obama's daughters got was a puppy.
I'd take the puppy.
But it makes sense, because Ivanka needs classified intel on China's human rights abuses to see if it is possible to pay her workers any less.
Ooh.
Trump.
Oh, no.
He was in fine form last night. Colbert.
Some of Ivanka's workers are here tonight, evidently.
Uh-huh.
Trump made his staff push for Ivanka's clearance instead of him pushing for it to avoid the appearance of nepotism. That's a good idea. Here's another way. Don't hire your children. And this morning, Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, returned to Capitol Hill for private testimony to the House Intelligence Panel. One thing that might have come up were the checks that Trump wrote to reimburse Cohen for paying off porn star Stormy Daniels. It's an accounting method known in the payroll industry as a crime.
Yes, it is.
Technically.
Well, technically, yes. Stephen Colbert was in fine form last night. It's just a little taste of his monologue that went on for at least double that amount of time. Welcome to the show. It is a Thursday. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thank you for being here. There's a lot going on today. Paul Manafort will be sentenced apparently in about a half hour. He's expected in the courtroom. The sentencing should happen sometime in there. There's something else that's going on today that I have not talked about on this program, mostly because I'm torn. I'm torn because as a Jewish American, albeit a secular Jew, it doesn't matter. I'm Jewish by heritage, by family, by legacy, I suppose. You know, I often think about, when I think about how I'm Jewish, I think about Elizabeth Warren and how she had always been told that her family had Native American roots. She wasn't a practicing member of a tribe, nor am I. I don't believe in God. I maybe believe in some sort of spirituality, but do I think there's this all-powerful being up in the sky? And no. And I reject organized religion. I think it's the cause of all the wars in this world. I think it's the cause of most of the hatred in this world. And I think organized religion is a big problem. And that's a topic for another day. I could talk about that till my, you know, eyeballs fall out. I don't know. But this topic, this of Ilhan Omar and her anti-Semitic trope, is troubling because what she said, and this was, I think, the second or maybe third instance that critics have pointed out that she said something anti-Semitic, was taken as anti-Semitic by many Jewish people. I do not support the actions of Israel. That's an understatement. I'm horrified by the way they treat the Palestinians who are imprisoned in the Gaza Strip. I'm also horrified by the way the Palestinians, you know, interact with the Israelis. But Israel does not equal Jewish. Yes, Israel is the home of the Jewish people. And after the events of, I must at least have Shabbat. I don't have Shabbat. I don't do any religion. I'm not religious. In my family, growing up on Hanukkah, there were three daughters. We would each pick a color candle and we would bet on whose would burn down first. That's my religious training came from watching the Ten Commandments on television. Seriously, I am not religious. I have no religion. I am not I have no use for organized religion. But I do acknowledge that my family is Jewish, and as such, there's a history there. Now, I don't know my family's whole story. I wish I could go on Henry Gates' Finding Your Roots show to find out exactly, you know, my family's history. But I'm pretty confident that I have ancestors who either were killed in the Holocaust or escaped, because that's where my family came from. That's my people. And so I understand the Jews have been persecuted for centuries. And the history of Israel is something else that is a topic for another day. I believe Israel has a right to exist. I believe, but I believe its current government sucks. One could say the same thing about the United States. I will say the same thing about the United States. I believe the United States has a right to exist. And I believe its current government sucks. I don't think that the country should be wiped off the planet because Donald Trump is the president. I hope that we are going to get rid of Donald Trump in 2020 and elect somebody who can take us into the 21st century in the manner in which this country should proceed. And I hope the same for Israel. I hope that there's peace. I hope that the Palestinians in Gaza are able to have their freedom. I wish the bombing would stop. I wish the hatred and the atrocities on both sides, and yes, I'm saying both sides, would stop. So here's what happened. Today, Democratic leaders in the House indicated this afternoon that they will vote today on a measure broadly condemning hate as they struggle with comments made by freshman Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. What she said, and you know what? I wish I had time to read the entirety of her statement. But I'm going to, what's pointed out is that she said that she suggested that Israel supporters have an allegiance to a foreign country. I'm going to read to you, I'm not going to read the whole thing, obviously, because her remarks went on for quite a while. I will post them, the transcription of her, what she said, on my blog at NicoleSandler.com, and I hope that you'll read it. But this is the part that people are pointing to. She said, so for me, I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country. And I want to ask, why is it okay for me to talk about the influence of the NRA, of fossil fuel industries, or big pharma, and not talk about a powerful lobby group that is influencing policy? So she was talking about AIPAC. The part that people found so offensive was, I want to talk about the political influence in this country that says it is okay for people to push for allegiance to a foreign country. Just because you are supportive of Israel does not mean you're pushing for allegiance to a foreign country. I guess you're supporting their right to exist. Nancy Pelosi was asked by a reporter today if Ilhan Omar understood why her comments were problematic. And Pelosi said, I don't think that the congresswoman perhaps appreciates the full weight of how it was heard by other people, although I don't believe it was intended in an anti-Semitic way. But the fact is, if that's how it was interpreted, we have to remove all doubt, as we have done over and over again. I'm actually in agreement with Nancy Pelosi here. I don't think Ilhan Omar intended her remarks to be anti-Semitic. In reading her comments in context, I don't believe she's an anti-Semite, but I do believe that she doesn't understand how her words were triggers, okay? How you know, and first of all, I'm sorry, but English is not her first language, and sometimes she gets caught up in the words, and maybe it sounds like I'm making excuses for her, because I want to believe the best. I don't believe she's a bad person. And I'd been, you know, David, my husband and I have been not arguing, but disagreeing about this in recent days. He took it as a very anti-Semitic trope, which I guess it is. My congressman is Ted Deutsch, and he is one of the people in Congress who is pushing for this resolution and who is upset that it was just that it was broadened to include hatred. Of all types, bigotry of all sorts, racism and intolerance of all peoples, because he sees these examples of anti-Semitism because he's been subject to them for his entire life, and his ancestors have been subject to them for centuries. But I think that a lot of people who are not Jewish, who haven't grown up with this background, don't get that the idea of people pushing for allegiance to a foreign country, that is an anti-Semitic trope. I wish I could just pull an excerpt of Ted Deutsch's speech and play it for you, because it was powerful, but I couldn't pull out just one part. So just so you can hear why, you know, I've been in too many discussions and chat rooms and email threads with women who were survivors of rape, who discussions of sexual abuse triggers them. Trigger is a term. Well, these statements that on the surface to someone who maybe has not been grown up with it, they don't realize that this is an insult. And Ted Deutsch explains that. And let me play a little bit of it for you.
I didn't rise to be political. This is personal. A few years ago, I was invited to speak at the UN General Assembly's special session on anti-Semitism. I told the representatives from the assembled countries that anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine, that if there is anti-Semitism in your country, there is hatred that will ultimately permeate throughout society if it is not checked. I never thought I would need to explain that to my colleagues. This is not political. No one should make it political. The use of anti-Semitic language and images can never be tolerated. When a presidential campaign runs a commercial alleging a Jewish global conspiracy in an ad featuring George Soros, Lloyd Blankfein, and Janet Yellen, it is invoking classic anti-Semitic tropes, and it must be condemned. And when the same campaign tweets an image of their opponent featuring a Jewish star and piles of money, it does the same thing, and it must be condemned.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of our colleagues accuses Soros, Steyer, and Bloomberg of buying the election, it also invokes classic anti-Semitism. That must be condemned. And when one of our colleagues invokes the classic anti-Semitic tropes, the anti-Semitic language, that Jews control the world, that Jews care only about money, that Jews cannot be loyal Americans if they also support Israel, this too must be condemned.
Yeah.
We have the opportunity to condemn all of that, by all of them, intolerable as it all is, by passing a strong condemnation of anti-Semitism. My colleagues, because of anti-Semitism over millennia, millions of Jews have been hated, targeted, expelled from their countries, violently attacked, killed, and exterminated. Words lead to action and to death. There is too much hatred, too many other people who are targeted, and we need to support all of them. But we are having this debate because of the language of one of our colleagues. Language that suggests that Jews like me, who serve in the United States in Congress, and whose father earned a Purple Heart fighting the Nazis in the Battle of the Bulge, that we are not loyal Americans? Why are we unable to singularly condemn anti-Semitism? Why can't we call out anti-Semitism and show that we've learned the lessons of history?
So Ted Deutch continued. It went on for almost 5 minutes. I will post the video on my blog today at NicoleSandler.com along with today's podcast and actually the entirety of what... of what Ilhan Omar actually said and the text of the resolution that they're voting on this afternoon. Where I disagree with Ted Deutch is that this should only be used to call out anti-Semitism. I think it's a good opportunity to call out all the bigotry and hatred and racism and that's festering today in this country. Where I fault them is that it doesn't single out Donald Trump. I don't understand why all this attention is focused on Ilhan Omar when the president of the fucking United States touted neo-Nazis marching in Charlottesville and chanting Jews will not replace us, that there are good people among those. Donald Trump is a bigot. He's a racist. He's an anti-Semite and worse. And he gets a free pass. I'm not saying two wrongs do not make a right. I think Ilhan Omar was misguided. I think she used the wrong words. I do not believe she's anti-Semitic. My belief. I also think that Israel is a reprehensible actor on the world stage today. And the sooner Benjamin Netanyahu is thrown in jail, the better. And maybe the Israeli people can get on with the business of being a good world citizen, which they are not right now. Somebody in the chat room on YouTube said, why can't we criticize Israel? Of course you can criticize Israel. There's a big difference between Zionists and Jews. I am a Jew, maybe not in practice, but by heritage. I'm certainly, and I believe in the right of Israel to exist. I just hate the way it's being run today. And I think if you're going to call out the hatred and the bigotry, the Republicans need to stand up and take ownership instead of criticizing someone on the left when they have problems in their own fucking house. So anyway, that's what's going on today. I can argue both sides of it. It sucks. And I hope that they get this over with and can move on. All right. The vote is now scheduled for this afternoon. The resolution should be introduced right around now. And the vote is expected to come sometime after 4. So there's that. All right. There's other news. Florida finally did something right. I'm going to blast through some of it until it's time to get Howie Klein on the air in about 10 minutes. So Florida got something right. This morning, a jury in Palm Beach County returned a guilty verdict on charges of armed manslaughter and attempted first-degree murder for a former police officer, a guy named Newman Raja. You might recall the case. We discussed it here at length after it happened. It was in October of 2015. Corey Jones, a 31-year-old black man, a musician, was driving home from a gig when his car broke down. So he was stopped on the shoulder of the exit ramp of I-95 at PGA Boulevard in Palm Beach. Jones was on the phone with AT&T roadside assistance at 3:15 in the morning when this plainclothes officer, Raja, approached the car. And he shot and killed Corey Jones. The cop claimed that Jones pulled a gun on him. The jury obviously didn't believe him. This is believed to be the first time a police officer has been convicted in an on-duty shooting in Florida in 30 years. So I guess we are making some progress. Thank goodness for small miracles. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen testified yesterday before the House Homeland Security Committee. It was a contentious hearing dealing with Trump's national emergency declaration, barriers, asylum laws, and the separation of migrant children from their parents. And, oh, yeah, cages.
We still using cages for children.
Sir, we don't use cages for children. In the border facilities that you've been to, they were not made to detain children. As the children are processed through, they are in subparts of those facilities.
Madam,
I don't,
Secretary?
I'm being as clear as I can, sir. Respectfully, I'm trying to answer your question.
Yes or no, are we still putting children in cages?
To my knowledge, CBP never purposely put a child in a cage.
What is a chain link fence enclosed into a chamber on a concrete floor represent to you? Is that a cage?
It's a detention space, ma'am, that you know has existed for decades.
Does it differ from the cages you put your dogs in when you let them stay outside? Is it different?
Yes.
In what sense?
It's larger. It has facilities.
Oh my God.
Provides room to sit, to stand, to lay down.
So did my dog's cage.
Oh, my God. How about this one?
You said that you waited to give direction on how to implement the zero tolerance policy because you wanted to do it with compassion. Do you know how outrageous that sounds? You wanted to separate children and families, and you wanted to do it with compassion. So in the meantime, you didn't do anything at all, and you let kids be separated without tracking them. Do you know how outrageous that is, Madam Secretary? You have no feeling, no compassion, no empathy here.
Gentlelady's time has expired.
I yield back.
That was Nanette Barragan of California. Meanwhile, over in the Senate, Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley and Ranking Democrat Dianne Feinstein sent a letter to the administration seeking an investigation of public allegations of sexual abuse of minors, of kids, in the custody of DHS. Stay tuned. At the same time, while all that was going on, during a Senate Armed Services Subcommittee hearing about sexual assault in the military, freshman Senator Martha McSally of Arizona testified that she was raped by a military superior while serving in the Air Force.
It's because of you that a light has been shined on this silent epidemic, and so many improvements have been made, including more than 100 legislative actions over the last decade on all aspects of military sexual assault. So, like you, I am also a military sexual assault survivor. But unlike so many brave survivors, I didn't report being sexually assaulted. Like so many women and men, I didn't trust the system at the time. I blamed myself. I was ashamed and confused. I thought I was strong, but felt powerless. The perpetrators abused their position of power in profound ways. And in one case, I was preyed upon and then raped by a superior officer. I stayed silent for many years, but later in my career, as the military grappled with scandals and their wholly inadequate responses, I felt the need to let some people know I too was a survivor. I was horrified at how my attempt to share generally my experiences were handled.
Obviously, there's a problem there. Retired astronaut Mark Kelly, the husband of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, last month launched a campaign as a Democrat to defeat McSally in 2020. And, of course, despite the horrors that happened to her, I hope I hope Mark Kelly wins. Michael Cohen was back before the House Intelligence Committee yesterday, where he reportedly gave lawmakers documents that show edits to the false written statements he made to Congress in 2017 about talks on a proposed Trump Tower in Moscow. NBC News has more.
Today, Michael Cohen was supposed to report to prison. Instead, with his sentence delayed, he was behind closed doors testifying again in front of Congress.
I'm here to cooperate and will continue to cooperate. So thank you all very much.
According to a source familiar with the matter, Cohen giving lawmakers new documents aimed at backing up his explosive claim last week that the president's lawyers made changes to his previous testimony about that scrapped Trump Tower project in Moscow.
There were changes made, additions, Jay Sekulow for one. There were several changes that were made, including how we were going to handle that message. The message, of course, being the length of time that the Trump Tower Moscow project stayed and remained alive.
NBC News has not reviewed the alleged documents. Cohen has pleaded guilty to tax and financial crimes and lying to Congress, and Republicans have attacked Cohen's credibility. Tonight, the president's attorney, Jay Sekulow, firing back, saying testimony by Michael Cohen that attorneys for the president edited or changed his statement to Congress to alter the duration of the Trump Tower Moscow negotiations is completely false. And tonight, the White House is pointing us back to its previous comment on Cohen's testimony, saying it is, quote, laughable that anyone would take a convicted liar like Cohen at his word.
Oh, my God. That, of course, coming from the administration of Donald Trump, who the Washington Post reports is now closing in on 10,000 false or misleading claims since taking office. He's the world's biggest liar, and they dare to point out. Anyway, breaking news this afternoon, Michael Cohen filed a lawsuit against the Trump Organization today. He's looking for them to pay his legal fees of $1.9 million and $1.9 million that he was ordered to pay for crimes he committed while working for Trump. Again, stay tuned. A new report from NBC's San Diego affiliate, really disturbing, says that the United States compiled a secret list made up of journalists, attorneys, and activists to stop for questioning at the border. I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about that. Following the leads of Michael Bloomberg and Senator Jeff Merkley this morning, Sherrod Brown, senator from Ohio, announced that he will not be running for president in 2020. And I want to thank him for that because we need him in the Senate. Because the Democrats need to take back the Senate in 2020. I already mentioned Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, is scheduled to be sentenced today, this afternoon, like now. He's expected in court, I believe, at 3:30. It's one of two sentences he faces. He could spend the rest of his life in prison as he's now 69 years old. His second court appearance is scheduled for next week. Yesterday, a second federal judge blocked a citizenship question from appearing on the 2020 census. They ruled that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross ignored federal law when he insisted upon adding the citizenship question. So all that is happening. You know what? Let me play for you. My math was off, so I still have a couple of minutes here. I want to play for you the report from the San Diego TV station about this list that the government is keeping at the border to stop journalists and activists.
Right. In December 2018, a migrant caravan from Honduras was heading toward the Tijuana-San Diego border. While those migrants made their way toward the San Ysidro port of entry, so did immigration advocates, attorneys, and journalists, including freelance photojournalist Ariana Dressler. Dressler estimated she had crossed the border from San Ysidro dozens of times for work. But in the month that followed her coverage of the caravan, Dressler said she and other journalists became targets of intense inspections. Some of them told NBC7 Investigates they suspected the U.S. government was monitoring them closely. These documents given to NBC7 show their concerns are warranted. NBC7 investigates Discover Dressler listed in a secret database. The source tells us it is only accessible by agents from Customs and Border Protection, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the U.S. Border Patrol, and the FBI.
I don't understand why.
The title page labels the individuals listed as, quote, suspected organizers, coordinators, instigators, and media tied to the migrant caravan. Those individuals include 10 journalists, a U.S. attorney, and 47 people from the U.S. and other countries. The documents show their photo, often from their passport, but in some cases from their social media accounts. The profile also includes information like date of birth and their role in connection to the caravan. Our source says each person's file also included a dossier with even more details. The documents also show officials placed alerts on most of the individuals' passports. Some have an X over their photo, indicating whether they were arrested, interviewed, or had their visa or sentry pass revoked. Those alerts kept at least 3 photojournalists and an attorney from entering Mexico to work. A Customs and Border Protection spokesperson did not answer NBC7's questions about the database, but by email, the spokesperson said in part, quote, criminal events such as the breach of the border wall in San Diego are routinely monitored and investigated by authorities. It is protocol following these incidents to collect evidence that might be needed for future legal actions.
This is frightening. As somebody in the chat room just said, McCarthyism all over again. Absolutely. And worse, because Donald Trump, we know, has an enemies list. And now they're keeping track of activists at the border and journalists and attorneys and stopping them and flagging their passports. This is fascism, people. We're living in it. And I've got to say, it's a bigger threat to the future of this country than a freshman congresswoman not understanding the consequences of the words she's using. Just saying. All right, it is Thursday. We love Thursdays over here because that's when Howie Klein joins us to talk politics. So let's get Howie on the line, shall we?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie. Ah.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acidic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Now would probably be a good time to mention that Chuck Schumer has just been announced as one of the speakers at APAC's 2019 conference. Hey, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole.
Yeah, just
thanks for hitting me.
Yeah,
right in the beginning.
Sorry, it popped up on my my Twitter feed this morning. Good timing there to be announced as a speaker at APAC's gathering. Yeah. Howie, I know we didn't talk about this, but the House is getting ready to vote on this anti-hatred resolution. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yes, I do, as a matter of fact. So a very widely held misapprehension that I had this misapprehension as well, but I'm someone who is a member of Congress who was in the meetings called me and told me I was wrong about something and explained to me why, and I'm going to pass that along right now.
Okay.
Which is that it's all Pelosi's fault. It's not. She was furious about how this whole thing came down. She didn't want it to happen. She's angry at the people like Nita Lowey and Juan Vargas for doing this. Her point of view is if they have a problem with something that someone like Ilhan, and you go up to them and tell them and talk to them about it.
Exactly.
Don't put it on Twitter and make a national case about it and play right into the hands of Republicans. So she's frustrated and angry And then I think the part of this that everyone knows by now is that what they tried to do with the resolution is drafted in such a way that it's almost easier for someone like Ilhan to vote for it than it is for someone like, I don't know, Louis Gohmert or Clay Higgins, because it now goes after, as part of it, it goes after white nationalists as well, and the hatred from the far right. And for someone like Clay Higgins, that's his whole constituency. I mean, that's who votes for him. Same with Louis Gohmert. I mean, I expect that they'll all vote for it anyway, but I was glad at least that they put that in there, because at first they weren't going to. You know, Hoyer was all for just, you know, putting in a thing, you know, that it was we're going to protect the country from anti-Semitism, and he agreed to, you know, Islamophobia and wanted to just leave it at that. But then some of the wiser minds came in and put in this other piece of this thing, which, you know, really denounces everything that the Republican Party is actually all about these days, other than the greed part.
Yeah. No, yeah. I hear you. I read through the entire resolution, and I agree with everything it says. Donald Trump needs to be called out for his racism. They're going after this woman when Donald Trump is the president of the United States, and he says worse things than she did every single day of his life.
But if you just read this thing, you don't get the conclusion that they're going after her.
No,
that's true. It is going after him.
Yeah, I guess. There's a lot being made of the fact that it doesn't call her out by name. My problem with it is it doesn't call him out by name.
It doesn't. It doesn't call anybody out by name. So if the shoe fits,
right.
Wear it.
There you go.
That's why I said I think it's easier for her to vote for it than some of these Republicans.
Yeah, I think you're right, especially those who tout their label of nationalist. They just leave the white off as if that makes a difference.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Howie Klein, Sherrod Brown this morning announced that he will not be running for president, which I take as a good news. I like Sherrod Brown, but we need him in the Senate, because it's really important that the Democrats take back the Senate in 2020, along with taking back the White House.
Yeah, well, I agree with you on that. I probably like him a little bit less than you do, but he's all right.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he's not running for president.
Yep.
Jeff Merkley sent out an interesting, who is also not running for president.
Right, he announced that earlier this week. Yep.
Right, and he sent out an interesting, he sent out a good solid email today. I just want to read a little bit of it. We need bold progressive solutions to the crises created by the privileged and powerful who have rigged our economy and our politics. It's not enough to just defeat Donald Trump. Any progressive priority, from Medicare for all to a Green New Deal to expanding Social Security to strong voting protections, will die in the Senate unless we take back the Senate and fix it. So, and then he went on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But he's right. I mean, and that's, and you know, whatever the reason was that Merkley decided not to run, and I suspect it was because he had put his name out there just in case Bernie didn't run.
Mm-hmm.
And once Bernie decided to run, then Merkley wasn't going to run against him. I mean, I don't know if people recall this, but Merkley was the only U.S. senator in 2016 to endorse and campaign
Sanders.
With Bernie.
Right. Yep, I remember.
It'll be different this time, but that's how it was in 2016. And
right.
And Merkley's a great guy. I think I've said on this show that he's someone that I would have supported, happily supported, if he got the Democratic nomination.
Right. He's great. But I don't think he stood a chance of winning the nomination. One, his profile isn't high enough. Two, he's not charismatic enough. Three, we need him in the Senate. We need good progressives in the Senate. And I, as much as I love Bernie, and I'm right now, he's my number one choice, I worry that this is not the year for an old white guy.
Yeah, I worry less about that.
Okay, good. So you have a piece up at downwithtyranny.com about the top Democratic Party establishment super PAC, Priorities USA. They decided that Ohio, Iowa, and Texas will not be target states for 2020. At least Bernie...
They're not their target states. Okay. So, in other words, they don't call the shots for the whole Democratic Party.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, the unfortunate fact of the matter is that they are completely tied in with the whole Democratic establishment. I mean, these are a bunch of Hillary people and Obama people. And so their way of thinking is very similar to the way of thinking across the party. Now, obviously, in my piece, I quoted people mostly in Ohio who didn't agree.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't agree. I think that Ohio and the Bernie people don't agree, by the way. Bernie's campaign, from what I'm hearing, although they didn't want to go on the record about this, very, very much are prioritizing Ohio and Iowa.
Good.
They are certain that those are going to be part of the key to Bernie beating Trump in 2020. And you know, I mean, they were incredulous that Priorities USA could write off those two states.
That's amazing.
I mean, Obama won both of the states both times he ran.
Wow.
You know, the reason that the Hillary people are freaked out and willing to write off those two states is because she did so terribly in them. She did really, really badly against Trump in Iowa and in Ohio. But that's about her. That's not about the people of those states.
Right. Right.
And in fact, what happened in 2018 after Hillary was no longer on the ticket, Sherrod Brown wins like a huge,
landslide.
Huge
right.
win across
yep.
the state.
Right.
And then in Iowa, you know, there are four congressional districts in Iowa. So it was one Democrat and three Republicans. After the election in 2018, mm-hmm. it was three Democrats and one Republican. And the one Republican came so close, and it's Steve King, came so close to losing that had the Democratic Party helped in any way the Democratic candidate, J.D. Shulton, had they helped him a little bit financially, had they backed him in a real way, he would have won. And it would have been four Democrats in Iowa.
Mm, wow.
Instead of just,
yep.
which is how they entered the cycle. So to write off Iowa is insane. I mean, they're crazy. And Iowa has a Senate election. So, you know, if we want to win the Senate, what we were just talking about a minute ago, not only do we have to reelect people like Merkley, we have to replace someone like Joni Ernst.
Yep.
Hopefully, J.D. Shulton, who's getting a lot of pressure to run from everywhere, he's getting a ton of pressure to run for the Senate. And hopefully we'll get someone like him in instead of her. And that's the key to getting rid of, what's his name, McTurtle.
Yeah, McConnell, absolutely.
McConnell.
So, yep. Yeah, and he needs to go. Because if McConnell remains Senate Majority Leader, which means Republicans retain control of the Senate, even if we get a Democratic president in, that person, he or she, will not be able to get any judicial appointments through. Won't be able. Yeah, I mean it'd be a quagmire, and Mitch McConnell.
Not just judicial appointments, but won't be able to
get anybody.
Won't be able to pass any progressive legislation.
Nothing.
I mean,
right.
Presumably, if voters are going to the polls and electing Elizabeth Warren president, or Bernie Sanders president, or even Kamala Harris president,
right.
If they elect them, they're electing them because of the platforms that they're running on and those policies that they're running on, and they won't be able to pass any of them if McConnell is still in control of the Senate.
Right.
Everything gets shut down.
Absolutely. So it is imperative. I mean, the race for the Senate is it's got to go hand in hand with the race for the presidency. The Democrats need to take both back. So even this early in the presidential cycle, of course, the polls have Joe Biden out in front, and common
very, Very, very slightly.
Right. Slightly ahead of Bernie Sanders. And the reason that, you know, experts say is, well, at this stage, it's name recognition. Obviously, Bernie ran last time. I think with his case, it's still a lot of very strong supporters. With Joe Biden's case, I think it's you know, the longing to go back to the Obama days when there was a president who was smarter than we were. Or, you know, the voter was anything but Trump. But
not just smart, but also, you know, a mensch and elegant,
yeah,
and someone to look up to and yeah, someone to feel proud
someone
of.
That, I mean, exactly. You know, even if you don't like him, he was presidential. He was a president.
He was a president, and the whole world loved him.
Yeah.
And of course, there were lunatics who hated him because of the color of his skin. But they're never going to vote for a Democrat anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And Biden, to a lot of people, Biden is just they don't know anything about Biden.
No.
Although Biden has the longest record of anybody, people don't know who he is. They don't know anything except Obama picked him. They don't even realize why Obama picked him. I mean, he's the ticket balancer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason. I mean, I have a post that's coming up as soon as you and I hang up. It goes up at 1 p.m.
Pacific
my time,
right.
4 p.m. your time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Biden for Dummies.
Uh-huh.
Dummies for Biden.
Right.
And it tries to explain who this guy really is and what, you know, right now he's very liked, but once people start finding out who he really was and what his record is and how he got started in politics and how he kept his power in politics, there are going to be lots and lots and lots and lots of people who say, I'm not voting for that guy.
Yeah.
So people now who think, they conflate him with Obama. Well, that's for a lot of people, that'll go away pretty fast.
You know,
once they find that he was the symbol of segregation,
yes,
in his state.
Well,
that's what made him famous.
There's a video.
And that's how he kept increasing his power. And that's just one aspect. The racial aspect is just one. The people are just as upset about what a corporatist he is. That,
mm-hmm,
that's the mark of this guy. Because he, at one point, he got over the racial thing. You know, I don't know if he did it in his heart. We'll never know. I suspect not, but I don't know that. But I mean, he went on record and said, "Hey, when it comes to other than civil rights, I'm a conservative. I'm a liberal on everything else, but I'm a conservative on I'm a liberal on civil rights, but I'm a conservative on everything else." And talked very, very openly about how he would, you know, vote specifically against things that were, when he was in the Senate, against things that were, considered to be liberal. And that's who he is. That's who he's always been. That ain't going to change.
No.
If you like Joe Lieberman, Then you like Joe Biden.
You know,
they were twins.
There's a video that's making the rounds today. It was unearthed by Andrew Kaczynski at CNN. And it's Joe Biden giving a Senate floor speech from November of 1993, pushing the crime bill. Remember the crime bill?
His crime bill.
He even put his name on it. He was a chair of the Judiciary Committee. Here's a little excerpt of Joe Biden in 1993 on the floor of the Senate. Listen to the words he uses.
Unless we do something about that cadre of young people, tens of thousands of them, born out of wedlock, without parents, without supervision, without any structure, without any conscience developing, because they literally have not been socialized. They literally have not had an opportunity. We should focus on them now. If we don't, they will, or a portion of them will, become the predators 15 years from now. And Madam President, we have predators on our streets. That society has, in fact, in part because of its neglect, created. Again, it does not mean because we created them that we somehow forgive them or do not take them out of society to protect my family and yours from them. They are beyond the pale, many of those people.
Aye.
Beyond the pale. And it's a sad commentary on society. We have no choice but to take them out of society.
My, those words will come
sound
back
like
to haunt him.
Donald Trump?
Yeah, very much so. Take
I mean, I just used that, that same video, by the way,
yeah?
in a post that I'm working on for tomorrow, talking about which talks about Ron Brownstein's story today in The Atlantic is all about how Trump's campaign is going to be based, I will protect you. And that whole basis of I will protect you, that's what we just heard from Joe Biden just now.
Well,
same
keep
thing.
Those super predators away from you. We're going to lock them up.
Forever.
Yeah. Get them off the streets.
Because he went on, I don't know, I don't think we had it in that thing. He went on in that speech talking about how they cannot be rehabilitated.
Rehabilitated, right.
We don't have the capacity to rehabilitate them.
That's right. Yep. And so the people who, you know, screamed about Hillary Clinton and her super predators comment, I want to hear them on this. I'm so sick of the David Brock Share Blue crowd, which I just realized this week is in partnership on the Sirius XM Progress 127 channel. That's why it's such a neo-lib channel. That's why there are no progressives on there, because this is all the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. And I would guess, I don't know if they want Biden or Kamala Harris. I think they're split between the two.
I haven't listened to it yet, but, you know, I'm, you know, a lot of the neo-libs have just sort of faded away quickly, like Kyrsten Sinema. I'm sorry, Kirsten Gillibrand was someone who, you know, a lot of the, you know, Wall Street was thinking, oh, she could be our gal, you know, and they liked her when she first came out, but she's sunk down into the 1% of polling everywhere and doesn't come out of it.
Hmm.
So some of those people are starting to coalesce around, you know, they'll take Amy
Klobuchar,
or they'll take, although it's a funny thing with Kamala Harris. Because ostensibly, she is backing all of the progressive, every progressive thing that Bernie brings up, she's Me Too immediately.
Hmm.
I mean, she's the one. I mean, even when, like, Bernie was the only one who was backing Ilhan and came out and spoke in favor of Ilhan
and
explained what the situation really was, the next person who popped her head up, and the only one, as far as I know, was Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And on every one of Bernie's issues, she says, yeah, I'm there too.
Hmm.
Now, it's not convincing to me that she's going to ever try to do anything about any of that stuff or has the capacity to. But, you know, so I'm not so certain about her. I really feel that the neo-libs and the, you know, the conservative Dems, the corporate Dems, the blue dogs, the new Dems, all that kind of stuff, that they're all going to rally around Biden as soon as he jumps in, which is momentarily.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason that Bloomberg announced he's not running. I'm certain that his announcement came right after he spoke to Biden, just to make sure that Biden was going to actually do it.
Wow.
Now, there's no doubt that Biden is going to do it because he's hired so many people. I mean, you don't hire a large staff and start paying them if you're not serious about it. So
right.
He's just doing the timing thing right now. And I expect that we'll hear from him very soon.
I guess this is the time. They've got to jump in if they're going to jump in. Do you think that there are going to be more? Or do you think Biden is probably the last, you know, major name to jump in?
No, I think there will be more.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a few others who are probably, I mean, you take a guy like McAuliffe. He wants to jump in. I don't know if he will. I mean, do you get his emails?
No, I do not.
Super PAC that's so stupid that it's like, I mean, basically I get like 2 or 3 emails from them a week. And what they do is they're advertising McAuliffe merchandise.
Oh,
you want to buy a McAuliffe hat or a T-shirt or a sweatshirt or a jacket. I mean, that's all they're doing.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if he's going to run or not. My guess is that he also would take a cue from Biden. That was my guess, that he was waiting there and wants to be absolutely certain that Biden is going to run before he decides not to. Or maybe he'll run anyway. Who knows?
Hmm.
And there may be some others. I don't think there are going to be any significant ones. From day one, I said this would be a contest between Bernie and a conservative who I always thought would be Biden.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a third, kind of a third wheel there, which is going to be, you know, sort of an, I know I'm going to get yelled at for this, but an identity politics person.
Yep.
Most likely.
Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that seems to be who the establishment people are pushing for. Again, the Cher Blue crowd, the David Brock crowd, they seem to be in the camp of Kamala Harris. Before we run out of time, someone in the YouTube chat room just asked, what was the big announcement Howie was talking about last Sunday? And obviously, that was Gerald Nadler sending out those 81 letters and opening up a slew of investigations into Trump, yes?
Right. Well, yeah, of course. He didn't use the word impeachment.
Nope.
But the way that you don't just say, okay, we're going to vote on impeachment. It starts with these kinds of investigations. And what he's done is he's told all of his the members of the House Judiciary Committee, okay, we're going for it now. And you don't have to say, you don't have to use the I word impeach when you're using the I word it, because everyone knows what you're talking about. So this is preliminary to impeachment, to an actual formal impeachment hearings, which have to be voted on by the House. So and then they will establish a committee of the House, which will in all likelihood be the Judiciary Committee. But there's a formal process to impeachment, and it does start with a vote of the whole entire House of Representatives. So Nancy will make that announcement, Nancy Pelosi, of course. But before that, the Democrats have to have the evidence. They have to have they have to have something to go on, and that's what Nadler announced on Sunday, and that's what I was talking about. I was told in advance that I couldn't tell anybody, and I went even further than I was supposed to, but that he was going to make. He was going to announce the first steps towards actual impeachment.
Wow.
Which is what he did.
Ah. Well, that's, exciting. And he went on the ABC Sunday show and announced this. And then Monday, the letters went out. And it's a
batch of letters, by the way. There are more letters to come.
Really? I was wondering because the name that was most conspicuous to me in its absence was Ivanka Trump. Why wasn't Ivanka
she wasn't
on that list?
On any of those letters?
No, she wasn't on that list.
I didn't even notice that.
Yep.
I mean, there were other names that were also conspicuously missing. One of them was the Mercers.
Ah, uh-huh.
Who were sort of, in some ways, the whole ringleader between... I mean, some of the entities were named, but not them. And they need to be named, and I'm hoping that the Judiciary Committee will pick up on that soon.
Hey, Howie, I real quickly, we've got just a couple minutes left. One of the people that is running that we didn't talk about today, who has great ideas, probably not considered a top tier candidate, but that's Marianne Williamson. Is your friend David managing her campaign again?
No. David's not. David is about to be announced for this amazing job. That again, forbidden from saying what it is.
Uh-huh.
But certainly by the next time we speak, it will have been formally announced. But
ooh.
David Keith, who's a good friend and who managed Marianne's campaign at one time for briefly, he didn't manage her whole campaign. He just did it for a few weeks, and then went on to be
Randy Bryce.
The manager of Randy Bryce's right. campaign. But he's done many other campaigns as well. He's about to be announced for a very important and new job that's going to be extremely helpful.
Oh, good. Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. Okay, we have something to look forward to
for next
week.
That'll be exciting.
All right. I'm just asking because I'd love to get Marianne back on the show. It's been a few years since she was on, and she's got
some good
ideas.
Oh, I'm sure she would do it.
Okay, well, I'll hit you up off the air to get your help in setting that up.
send an email to both of you, or do you want
sure,
me to just
no, that'd be
send
great.
You her email address?
Why don't you send the email to both of us, because she knows you. Okay. I don't know if she remembers me. I interviewed her a few years ago. So yeah, obviously with your juice, it would give it more credence. But I'd love to get her on because she's got great ideas. And that's what we need in primary season, are great ideas coming to the front. We need to drown out the Biden news.
Your listeners to read her the issues pages she has on her campaign website. No one has a better issues pages than her. She's really gone into things in a very granular way, and you know she's right on every issue.
Cool.
So when people make fun of her or refuse to take her seriously as a candidate, they obviously don't realize how serious she is.
Right. So that's
nor do they understand what a big following she has.
Oh, she's huge. So Marianne2020.com, I believe, is her website. Howie Klein,
yes.
We're out of time. We look forward to your post going up in a couple of minutes at downwithtyranny.com. Thank you. Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.